Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello, I'm Em, and today I'll be speaking with Lucy. Lucy was first diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer in 2016 when she was just 28 years old. After completing treatment and being declared no evidence of disease, Lucy found she had a recurrence in February 2020. We'll be speaking about how she's dealing with this, as well as her experience with being on a newly approved treatment. Lucy, thank you for joining me.
Hi Em, thanks for having me.
Could you please begin by telling me about your first diagnosis 5 years ago?
Yep. We had just celebrated our first year wedding anniversary, and we had just got back from Fuerteventura Ventura, and I'd got in the shower, and being truthful, I never checked my breasts before, ever. There's no history of it in the family, so, and with social media and stuff like that, I wasn't really up with it at that time, so there was adverts and stuff, but I never really checked. And I noticed while I was washing that I had a lump in my left breast. So, and it sort of felt like frozen peas. That's how I described to people how it felt. Mm. And it sort of moved about. I didn't think anything of it. I just thought, oh, okay, it could be a block milk duct, because I breastfed my daughter for 6 months. So I went downstairs to my husband and I said to him, I found this lump. And instantly, when I felt it again, I felt sick. Mm. I don't know if it was instinct or what, but immediately I phoned my GP, and they was amazing. I got straight in the next day. He checked over me, and he found a lump under my left armpit as well. So he said he was going to refer me straight away to the breast clinic. Again, I didn't think anything of it. I thought, you know, I'm too young for this. It can't be breast cancer. Even though it was flitted about at the time with my friends. Mm. And it was crazy. I got a call after 2 days after my doctor referred me, and straight in to see my consultant at the breast clinic. And he checked over me. He said, right, we'll put you in for an ultrasound. I had the ultrasound, then I had a biopsy. Now, they did it in my lymph nodes and also in my left breast. And at the time, she said to me, are you going to bring someone along with you for your results? And I didn't think anything of it. I just thought, I'm going to bring my husband. So I had the biopsy. It was quite painful, but, you know, they needed to do it. Went in with my consultant. And he said, right, we'll see you in a week. Didn't mention anything. In hindsight, I look back and I think to myself, I didn't book an appointment. He just told me to turn up. He knew straight away.
Yeah.
You know, they deal with it daily. So I went away. Merry, didn't think I would have breast cancer at all. Went and saw my family and friends. And then the week rolled round, got there on the Monday, and my Miller nurse came out. She was wearing her jacket. Again, I didn't think anything of it. My husband said he knew straight away as soon as he saw the jacket. We went in with him, and that's when he told me that I had breast cancer. At that stage, they didn't know what stage it was, what grade, or what type of cancer it was. But I just remember looking straight through him and thinking, you're lying. Like, I couldn't actually believe he was telling me that, because I was just so young. I never heard of anybody being so young as having breast cancer before. And the first words that came out of my mouth was, I've got a daughter. That's the first thing I thought about when he told me that. And yeah, it was just a whirlwind from then. I had a CT scan. I saw my oncologist, and that's when they told me I had triple negative grade 3 breast cancer, and I had 6 months of chemotherapy. I had a single left mastectomy, and I had 8 nodes removed, which after the pathology came back, it showed that I had a full pathological response. And only one of the nodes that they took out had a tiny trace of cancer in it. So, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it was a win. And then I had radiotherapy, and I was declared no evidence of disease. And, you know, you try and get on with your life after that.
Yeah, yeah, of course. And like you say, you were so young. You say you weren't checking your breasts, but younger women tend not to have the inclination to do that because we're not always told, but we often believe that it is only older women who are at risk. And it's just, you know, it's not something that we talk about as younger people, but it's so good that you did check and then you did actually follow through and get that investigated. But I can understand your complete disbelief at being told that you had breast cancer, because it is so uncommon to get it at a young age. But unfortunately, just speaking to people on this podcast, we've already encountered a few people that were diagnosed even younger than you, actually. So it's few and far between, but it does happen. So it is so important to have that awareness and to actually go and get things checked out if there are abnormalities. But obviously, after that first diagnosis, you must have been so much more aware of your body and any changes that were happening. So what prompted you to check out any symptoms that indicated you had a recurrence last year?
To be honest, I tried to steer away from it for a bit. I think mentally, after I got it all clear, I was on tamoxifen, and I shouldn't have been on tamoxifen, because there was a slight indication that my cancer was slightly hormone positive, but they wasn't 100% sure. So they gave me the tamoxifen just in case. And in my own mind, I thought, you know, I beat this. I've done it. I've gone through the treatment, and I tried to get on with my life. I was vigilant. I did check my breasts. I would, to be honest, I probably checked maybe once a day. It wasn't one of these once a month. I would check once a day. And looking back, it's not a healthy way for me. That wasn't healthy, because it was constantly in my mind. I was constantly reliving it. And one of my friends actually said to me, maybe schedule yourself in to check, set yourself a reminder, because then you will learn to forget about it for that bit of time, and then you can focus on it for that week or that month. And to be honest, I just tried to get away from it. I tried to live a life without cancer.
Yeah.
And it wasn't actually me that found it this time around. They actually, I did feel the lump under my arm, but I thought it was scar tissue from where I had my lymph node removed before.
Right, okay, yeah.
So it being found this time around, it was from a pre-op just before I was due to have my reconstruction. So I'm grateful that they were checking me and actually vigilant, because I just thought it was scar tissue. I didn't think it was anything sinister. And in hindsight, maybe I should have.
Yeah, but I mean, your reaction was completely understandable, and how you approach things, not wanting to really keep checking as vigilantly, even though you still were. I think once a month or once a week, it's like, it would give you plenty of time to check for any changes. So you were doing the right thing. That's easily confused for scar tissue if you had already had surgery in that area. But thank goodness it was spotted. I mean, this is obviously a huge question, but how did that make you feel, knowing that you'd had a recurrence?
I felt deflated. I sort of felt like I never actually beat it, and I never won. And initially I was angry. Initially I beat myself up about it. And I think if I see it in a completely different way now, my first diagnosis, I was completely oblivious to it, completely oblivious to the cancer world, breast cancer. This time around, I'm more aware of what happens. And I never thought in my wildest dreams that, you know, I would be diagnosed with breast cancer, let alone have a recurrence. And ultimately, I felt my body had let me down. It wasn't the professional. I didn't feel the professionals let me down because they did everything possible to try and cure me at that stage. I didn't trust myself or my body.
I think that's a completely natural response. We have this inclination to blame it on something. And when there's nothing else to blame, it almost feels like you have to take it into yourself, even though that's completely not the case. And it is just unfortunately very random and so unpredictable sometimes. And I'm just glad that it was caught for you. And I mean, even on this second time round, you're still so much younger than we would expect a typical breast cancer patient to be. And how do you feel that your age had a huge impact on how you responded to treatment and how you responded to your diagnosis?
I think it did and it didn't. You know, like I said, that I never thought in my wildest dreams I would be diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of 28. And I think my whole life was put on hold. At the age of 28, you want to go and explore. You know, I've already got my little family, but I was due for a promotion with work. I was doing exams, my financial exams at work. And they had to be put on hold. And I felt like my life was in limbo, being the age I was, and everyone else was moving up in the world. And I wasn't. And I think being on the flip side as well, for my age, I think it's helped me manage the side effects of treatment. And I know many women who are a lot older than me, and they have just rallied through. They've been amazing on their treatment and they've got through it. And I know young women who have as well, but I feel it's mind over matter for me. And I'm grateful my side effects aren't as severe as others, and that has helped me. And I'm still young, and I'm also fit. I would like to think I was fit, but you know, it's mind over matter for me, and it always has been.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned your family there. How did it impact them? I mean, obviously your daughter was so young when you were first diagnosed. Were you able to talk to her about it? Did she understand what was going on?
No. So when I was diagnosed in 2016 and she was 4. So she was just starting primary school. And when we got the diagnosis, I wanted to tell her I was poorly, but not the whole reason why I was poorly. I didn't want to use the cancer word.
Of course.
And all that we told her was that I had a poorly boobie and that I would be having treatment. And, you know, she became very protective because she saw me at my worst. She saw me with no hair. But she would also find the humour in that. That's kids, I think. They're very resilient.
Yeah.
And there was a scenario when we was walking down the street and some young kid was, you know, laughing at me, and it's kids, I get that. And because I had no hair and I didn't have a bandana on, I didn't have a wig on or anything. And she immediately got defensive and protective and stuck up for me. And I had never seen her do that before. So for me, it was like, it was a wow moment, but also at the same time, I was thinking she shouldn't have to do that at her age. She shouldn't have to feel like she's got to protect her mum. And it's actually made her into such an independent, thoughtful little girl. And especially this time around as well, she was 8. So now she understands more. She knows about cancer. She's seen it on the telly. She's seen advertisements. And she asks questions about it, but she doesn't talk about it often. but she has managed to, she suffered a bit mentally with school, with COVID, you know, that's been a whole nother level.
Mm.
But, you know, she's very independent and I'm proud of her, so proud of her. And I think this will help shape her, even though kids should never have to see their parents go through something like this. It will shape her, I believe, into someone who will stick up for herself, someone who is vigilant. And also she will be aware of her own body. And she also is very aware of her own body because she sees me check in.
Yeah.
You know, my breasts. She sees me check in. She asks about it. And it's so important. Even though they don't understand the whole mechanics of it, they don't understand the whole cancer world, it's important when she grows up that she can know about, you know, breast cancer, because really I don't have the BRCA gene. I don't have it.
Mm.
So, which, you know, I'm grateful to not have it, because that's an extra stress if I did, and it's more comfort for Nevaeh. But I think that it's just about being vigilant, more vigilant. And I'm just grateful that she's turned out to be so thoughtful and protective. And also my husband, he's been my rock. He's been amazing. Like he took it harder than me initially. He took it harder than me, but he's just amazing. He's brilliant.
I'm glad you've got your little team of supporters behind you there.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is obviously so much more difficult when there are young children having to go through that situation with you. But like you say, they're resilient, and it sounds like you've prepared your little girl for anything that might come her way in the future. And obviously, hopefully it doesn't, but anything should happen, it seems like she'd be very prepared for that, and she'd be vigilant and will probably let other people know about it as well. And as when you were in your situation and you thought, I'm young, not at risk, she's obviously now got that knowledge that she can share with other people. And it sounds like she's a pretty tough cookie as well. but the treatment that you're on this time as well, I think the way you've talked about it, it sounds like this has been a bit kinder the second time round. But this is a new treatment. Is that right? Is it sort of recently been approved?
Yeah. So the treatment I'm on is a combination of an immunotherapy, which is atezolizumab. I just call it TEZ because sometimes I get mixed up. And chemotherapy, which is Abraxane. When I was diagnosed in February 20, this was a new regime that was newly available due to a clinical trial that was carried out a couple of years ago.
Mm.
And with me having a triple negative cancer, breast cancer, there's not many targeted therapies out there for it.
Mm.
And as I've already had treatment for primary breast cancer, my oncologist wanted to see whether I would qualify for this new regime. In order to qualify for it, there's a cell, they call it the PD-L1 cell, which your cancer has to show that when they do the biopsies. And fortunately, mine did, and it enabled me to become a candidate on this. It's a rollout trial, so it's already been trialed with a certain amount of patients, and it's now been rolled out to, you know, the public to use. And I understand from my oncologist that I am the first person under her and within the borough who has started this treatment. So it's all new, and as she says, I'm her guinea pig. So it's all really, we're just winging it at the moment. We're just seeing how it goes. And I have the treatment every 2 weeks by infusion, and it's been brilliant. It's shrunk it within the first couple of months. And the scan that I had, the first scan I had in July 20, showed there was no evidence at all of the disease.
Amazing.
And then since then, I have scans every 2 to 3 months, three to 4 months, which is the pathway that they've created just to monitor it and make sure that it's being kept at bay and it's not growing anywhere else. And it's been clear since then. So it's working well. And, you know, I'm pleased with the side effect. I just feel a bit lethargic every now and then. I lost my hair initially. And then it started to grow back after, I think, a couple of months. So I'm back to my curly fro.
Oh, that's so positive. So the trial that you were on was, like you say, you were kind of being treated as a quote unquote guinea pig.
Yeah.
Did you have any apprehension going into it, having heard that?
Yes. When I was re-diagnosed, well, with the recurrence, I didn't have any trust in my body. So I thought it's let me down. And like I said at the beginning, I felt that it had won. I hadn't won the battle. It had won. Now, with this new treatment that had been rolled out, there was no extensive data on it to, you know, for the preferred outcomes. There's a little bit of data, but there's not, for my oncologist, there's not enough out there to determine the next steps, which is what they're trying to deal with at the moment, with having these rollouts after the clinical trial was completed.
Mm.
So when she told me I was going to be on this, I initially thought it must be good if they've done a, you know, clinical trial and they're rolling out, it must be good. But to be honest, when I've had the first treatment, I thought to myself, you know, is this going to get me? Is this, you know, is the cancer going to kill me? And it's about having trust in the people who are, you know, the professionals. It's about having trust in yourself. And I lost that trust within myself, and I'm slowly rebuilding that. And I think it goes hand in hand when you're going for treatment and also with the professionals. It's all about, and like I said before, mind over matter. And hoping that this treatment works, hoping that it's going to do the job and keep it at bay, keep it away. Initially, they didn't tell me they couldn't cure me. This time around, it is that, you know, the aim isn't to cure it. It's just to keep it away and keep it at bay for as long as possible. And for me, it's just about proving them wrong and hoping that this rollout actually does the job, and I can be one of them people that say, yeah, it's done the job, and I'm still here 20 years later, you know. But it's the apprehension is always there initially, and, you know, the second, third, fourth time round, it's always going to be there. But it's all about trust for me.
Thank you. Again, I think that is very important to talk about, not just the losing trust in yourself, which I think is a very common experience, but also then finding the strength to have that trust in medical professionals and rollouts like this, because so much work goes into them. Like breast cancer now is involved in research as well as care. So yeah, we know how much is put into these and how strongly we want them to work, and we have really got patients in mind. And I think you're playing a really important role here by going through with it. That's absolutely fantastic. And is there, you seem to have really great scientific insight into what's going on here, which is fantastic for me, because I'm kind of tuning in and be like, oh, I want to know more about this. What's going on? And is there an end date at all now, or is it just sort of an ongoing process and they're still sort of fine tuning it as far as you're concerned?
We're just keep going,
right.
Just keep going. I know initially they did say about 2 years, mm-hmm. but because my side effects are non-existent at the moment, they have said, we just keep going with the chemo and the immunotherapy together, mm-hmm. Until it either gets, how she's explained it is, it gets too toxic for my body or it stops working. So the cancer starts to grow. Either in the same site or elsewhere, but it's doing its job. It's keeping it at bay, and it's just, for me, it's doing its job, and I've just got to trust them and trust myself.
Yeah, I think that's really important as well. And just keep up. Like, I can tell you've got a pretty positive attitude, and you seem very resilient. So I'm really pleased to see that, especially as this last year has no doubt been absolute hell. I mean, you had your recurrence right at the same time, or just briefly before the whole country was plunged into lockdown. So how has COVID affected all this for you? Was it, I don't know, did it compound it and make it even harder, or is it just kind of all blur into one? How did you deal with that?
I think initially I was, with my diagnosis this time around, I knew that I would have to isolate anyway because of, you know, your immune system. With COVID, people weren't going out, people weren't socializing, people weren't seeing their family, and it's tragic and it's horrible, but people were getting an insight into what cancer patients go through on a daily basis. We have to, you know, stay in our house. We can't really visit people that much, because if someone's got a cold, it can be deadly for us. So what I say to people is, I wasn't having FOMO, so I wasn't getting fear of missing out on stuff, because everyone else was in the same boat. But on the flip side, I had my family. I could spend more quality time with them. You know, my husband wasn't working for a little bit because he was unsure of how, if he could bring something into the house. So he was at home with us. My daughter was off school, so I was homeschooling as well. It was just that extra bit of family time, you know, walks, and thank God for technology. Because FaceTime has been brilliant. Like, being able to speak to my sister and my friends, it's replaced going out and drinking and, you know, partying and going out and having meals with your friends. But at the same time, you can still have that connection with them. You can still have a party on the phone, or, you know, whatever everyone wants to do. But I feel it has been hard, because we've been confined in the house and I haven't been able to do what I normally do. But on the flip side, everyone else has had to do the same in some way or another, which has sort of helped me mentally.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope that sort of the behaviours that we've picked up and we've learned over the last year, we can continue them for people that are immunocompromised. Wearing masks out in public if you know that you're sick and possibly contagious, which so many people still seem a bit reluctant to do, but we've learned that it really helps, it makes a difference. And yeah, like you say, if you have to isolate, at least a lot more people are accustomed to chatting via FaceTime or having a phone call, and realizing the usefulness and the quality of that. It doesn't always have to be face to face. So in a way, it is kind of a slight positive, like you say, that other people were at least in the same situation as you in terms of having to isolate themselves, and you weren't alone there.
Yeah. When I was first diagnosed, I thought I was in it on my own. I was trapped by my diagnosis. I felt no one understood me. And there's this big stigma of chemotherapy and going through treatment is all doom and gloom. Yes, it's grueling. Yes, it's something that no one should have to go through. But initially, I thought my whole world was ending. And when I started treatment, I met some amazing people, whether it be through social media, you know, in the actual chemo chair, you know, and you meet the nurses. I've met some amazing friends for life through treatment. And it's nice to have that person, or them people who actually understand what you're going through and can relate, even though you would never wish it on anyone and you would prefer not to meet these people in those type of circumstances. But before I started treatment, I thought, I'm gonna have to do this alone. And now I know I'm not alone. Even though we've got our friends and our family, it's different. It's a different type of understanding. And these women and men who I've met, they've helped me. You know, you can have a vent to them and them understand. You can have a cry and them listen and actually know what you're going through. So it's having that community after that. I feel like it's essential for me. It's essential for me that I've got that, and that's something I didn't know before.
To hear more from Lucy and also to check out her blog, you can follow her on Instagram at Life or Just Lucyisms, and we'll put that Instagram handle in the show notes for you. And with that, thank you so much for speaking with me today, Lucy.
Thanks so much, Em.
Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.